Blog Talk Radio.
Nothing like an audience on their feet and clapping to make you glad that you got out of bed. Welcome, people. Welcome to She's Raising the Bar, Blog Talk Radio, day 90. Elite Diggleman.
Yeah. You're counting 90. Down, huh?
Day 90 in the pandemic. And you know, this week has been a week of
Craziness.
Thought it was safe to go back and
craziness.
Just when you thought it was coming to a more calm resolve, something happens. And again, the thing that happened that caused the outrage was something that, look, we should be outraged about. You know, police brutality. And I will go on border saying, we have wonderful cops. We have corrupt cops. Just like in any walk of life, there's good, there's bad.
Good and bad.
And it's always the bad that gets reported. And what we saw this week was just beyond
horrendous.
That you want to watch on a video, on Facebook, on TV. And, of course, in the midst of a pandemic, we're having demonstrations. And I'm using the word demonstration now because protest sounds a little bit more volatile, even though it's not supposed to be. But I think more people think it's more of an accelerant to a fire. And people that are peacefully demonstrating are doing the right thing.
Yes.
Now, the problem is, demonstrating during a pandemic is a little hard because I'm watching TV, and as much as you want to say you get behind it, and yeah, this is the most patriotic we could be because we want to say, you know what, I love my country so much, I know when we're not doing what we should be doing, and I want it to change. And that's all a protest is about. Whether I agree with it or not, that's what a protest is about, and everybody's got a right to it. It's First Amendment, right to assemble. This is what we have to do. Mm-hmm. But when I see demonstrators with no masks,
and they never said one word.
Concerned.
And they never said one word about that. There's
tons of
people that are demonstrating, protesting, okay?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, they were honoring a rabbi that died. And in Borough Park, they had to break up that.
Yes.
Because there was too many people. And they were wearing masks.
I remember.
They were. 90% were wearing masks. But when it comes to protesting and demonstrating, I mean, it's just, it's a give and take here. You're going to allow that, but you're not going to allow somebody honoring their holy monarchy. Do you understand? We spoke about this before, you know, I'm a Jewish person. I've been been involved in racial stuff all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Just my last name, especially after I got married, it's a very Jewish name, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just racism will never go away, whether you're black, whether you're Asian, whether you're Jewish, whether you're anything, it will never go away. No matter how many times these things are going to happen, because it's happened since the 40s, since the 30s, it's always going to happen.
And it will.
Always.
And you know what? It should. It should. We should protest these things. And this is what
I'm not talking
we should
about protesting.
Doing.
I'm talking about racism. Okay.
See, that's the whole thing.
It's just not fair that, you know, sometimes it's racism and sometimes it's protesting. It's just, it's not fair. It's a double standard here. It really is.
See, the reason for protesting is racism, whether it's anti-Semitism. We have to assemble and say, you know what, this is not right. We can make this better. And I always say, and you've seen me in arguments with people that are not on my political leanings. And it's fine. And I always say, our country is great because of it. I could say to you, I don't agree with you. You could say, I don't agree with me. But at the end of the day, say hello to your wife. Say, I hope your family's
right.
okay.
Agree to disagree.
That's how we're right. supposed to do it. That's how we have to do it. That's mm-hmm. how we have to do it. Because wonderful things were born of conflict. Wonderful things
yeah.
were born of the divide.
We can't all agree on things. No.
Yeah. And the blue and the
no
red.
There's no need for violence. Right. There's no need
no.
for violence.
No.
And no, especially looting. Where did
no.
that come from? You know?
Well, now,
I mean,
this is what I was
it's
thinking
just,
of this morning. Finish your point. Yeah, finish your
no,
point.
No, it's,
and
just,
make
it's
mine.
Just it just makes me angry. You know what I'm saying? Because it just everything takes a step backwards when that happens. Because again, when you see the looters, they're not white; they're black. And when you do that, you're just defeating the whole purpose of sticking up for your race. Okay.
Well, now see, the thing is, my thinking is any underserved portion of the population
mm-hmm.
certainly has had the hardship that, thankfully, we don't know. So at this point, and this is what I was thinking of this morning, if you look at the blackout of 1977 and the blackout of 2003,
mm-hmm.
they were very, very different for one reason. The economy was different. 1977, we were just coming out of recession or still in. I mean, we were just in bad, bad shape economically. 2003 was very different. It didn't get to about 2007 where we started getting on shaky ground. So
right.
this is the thing. There will always be people, and I know a lot of people that live in underserved areas, that have
mm-hmm.
pride in where they live, and they just want to raise their family and just live out their lives in peace. Then there are other people that are agitators. And that could
right.
be, and look, there are agitators in the elite as far
oh,
as.
Oh, for
as
sure.
As, absolutely. So it's not like, I mean, the incentive for anger will certainly be underprivileged, but we have a lot of people that are, and I'm not going to mention anybody, you know, specifically, but I think we know who we're talking about, who are angry and just going against the grain just because, and it has nothing to do with economic standard. This is just the way it is. So the people that were protesting, and you know, I've been there. I have no problem protesting. My band, John and I have done protest music. It's peaceful. It's just getting your point across. But when it's escalating, that's a totally different. That becomes a different animal,
exactly.
A totally different animal. And that's where we are today in New York. Anybody who's listening on the West, any place else in the world, you know what's going on. You know what's going on. And a lot of people, I have to say, people who are marching for this in Berlin, people are marching for this in Prague. I mean, this is something that the whole world saw. And the whole world is reacting to it. And it's a beautiful thing because, you know, we see injustice and this is what we do. We rally together and say, it can't be anymore. It can't be for my
mm-hmm.
kids. It can't be for my grandkids. And here is where we are. But welcome people to She's Raising the Bar. Good.
No, I'm going to just go back to what you're saying, that there's protesting allowed during this, you know, virus time, and how is that allowed? How is that allowed? I don't understand.
You know, and that's going to be something that, you know, and again, you start out one way, and I've been in protests where if you say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, it starts out the right way. So if people said, you know what, yeah, we're going to stay 6 feet apart, we're going to wear our masks. It doesn't always end up that way. And it's so, you know,
it was televised
it's
yesterday. Did you see the city?
It's something you can't control.
Did you see the
I
city?
Saw.
It was like, it
I
was
saw.
Massive, massive.
I saw. And look, as much as I want to say it's a wonderful thing, and I think demonstrating is great.
Not during this time.
We're gonna probably feel a backlash. But again, you know, and see, this is what we're going to be talking about today with the restaurant industry, which I think is, and you agree, it's taking...
That's going to take a step backwards also.
Yes, it's taking the hardest hit, I think, in all of this, as far as opening up, having people sitting 6 feet apart, outdoor dining. I mean, the landscape of everything has really, really greatly changed, and I don't know if it's going to be any better in a year. I want to say a year. I'm being optimistic. In a year,
that's what I told you the last couple of shows. It's not going to be the same for at least a year, at least. It's going to be a long crawl back for us, only for us New Yorkers, not for anybody else. So I think we have to start moving.
Well, I think that everybody's going to feel, I think we're going to feel the harsher punch to this. But
I'm telling you, down south, everything is open to where it's almost normal. North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida. It's basically 85% opened, and people are sitting in restaurants.
Okay, now, if a second wave comes, now see, this is what you've got to watch. If something happens and there's
well, again, we're not as overcrowded. They're not as overcrowded as New York City. New York City is very overcrowded, and we're on top of each other constantly. Mm-hmm. Look at the subway alone. Come on. You never get a seat on the subway. I mean, you're crunched in like sardines all the time.
Yeah.
But anywhere else, it's not like that. So we are going to be the last ones to ever feel normalcy for a long, long time.
No, I would say phase two.
We didn't even get to phase one yet until next week.
Two. Yeah, well,
phase
it's interesting
one didn't
because
even
I'm watching.
For us.
I'm watching all the caveats to phase one, and even hairdressers where you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do dye. It's just okay.
No, you can't
and
do
again,
anything.
Everybody wants to go back to work, and I totally get that. Believe me, I totally get that. But there are so many things that are going to change the nature and the texture of your work,
mm-hmm.
of what you do. You know, it's just makeup artists. I mean, it's just going to be very, very, very different than we knew. And hopefully, I'm hoping by the time the holidays come around, we'll be closer to what we recognize as normal than we are now. But first, before we bring on our guests, and I don't know who's on now because it's about a little after 1:10, let me introduce to you the usual cast of characters, two-person play. Sitting to my left, always close to my heart, right over the Verrazano Bridge, is the lovely riding shotgun with me for the past 8 years, Elise Eagleman.
Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm blushing. And sitting to my... I'm blushing.
right, baby. Right, baby girl. Right.
And sitting in the heart of Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
Lovely
yeah.
and talented Lori Towers.
See, I did that.
Oh.
How about that?
Where'd
that
come from?
I had it because I figured it's too samey with the claps.
That's because the essential workers of the construction workers are out now, right?
That's I was walking past the construction site. What can you do? 57 years old, still got it. What can you do? You got to flaunt it. But I didn't want to boot myself again this week. But coming on with us today, and this is you and I discussed this a couple of weeks ago, the restaurant industry is just enormous. And it's just so diverse as far as there is such a difference between what happens in Manhattan and what happens elsewhere. I mean, it's just incredible because I'm hearing both sides, and it's just almost a very different animal. So today we have, and both people have been on the show with us before. We have Pamela Tavesi, who's been on, I think it's the third time coming on with us. She's with the Staten Island Advent, and she's who I call the LaGuardia of Staten Island. Now, anybody who's under 50, doesn't know that LaGuardia, during very hard times, depression, he would go on the air and he would read the comics every Sunday to quell a suffering society and a worried society and a society that didn't know what was going to happen next. And he did that every Sunday. She does a live stream every single day. Let me tell you something. We do the show once a week, and I can tell you, not easy. Not easy having all your notes in front of you and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And she's doing that every week. Every day, I'm sorry. And hats off to her, because she's going to be doing it until this all ends. And I got to be honest with you, I don't know when it's going to be. But counterpoint to that is going to be Meryl Pearlstein, who I know probably, I'd have to ask her, either 15 to 17 years. And she has written for New York Magazine, Crain's Five Boroughs, GQ, Boston Herald. I mean, I think Time Out, too. She's been in every restaurant known to mankind, I think, in Manhattan, probably Queens, and I'm sure the Hamptons. So it's going to be a really nice dialogue. And
for
letting
sure.
them both, I mean, you and I will step back a little bit and let them go back and forth in volley, because it's, we need to know where the industries are going, and we need to know where it's going to have some, you know, air brakes put on, you know. And
right.
I don't want to say it, but I think it's going to be Manhattan, even with, all, you know, outdoor dining on Columbus Avenue and the Upper West Side. I think it's going to be a harder comeback than any place else.
Oh, you ain't kidding. Let's bring them on. We have, they're both on.
And actually, bring them on and have them announce, because we don't know. I can't see, so I don't
welcome,
know.
Welcome, ladies. You are on the air.
Hello. Hi there.
Hello, darlings. Oh, hello, yes. Ladies. How are you today?
Doing great.
Very well, thank
you.
Hi.
And introduce yourself to each other, ladies. Meryl, this is Pamela. Pamela, this is Meryl. Like-minded.
Hi.
Kindred spirits.
Hi, Pamela. I'm Meryl.
Meryl, it's so, I've never met a Meryl that I didn't like, so it's thank you. And that's great to talk about food. You're a travel blogger. How about that? That's one of two industries really socked pretty hard by the pandemic, I got to say.
Yeah.
I know. I actually, the three beats that I cover, it's not just travel. It's travel, restaurants, and theater have really hit me hard.
Oh, forget it.
Oh, my
goodness.
God.
The triumvirate
let's
of
all have whiskey.
Depression.
Yeah. Yeah, let's all have whiskey now. I think that's the best thing. But Pamela, first of all, Pamela, happy anniversary. It's, I think, your 20th today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy anniversary. Well, thank you for coming on. 20.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm writing about go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No. I was going to say I'm going to start with you and get the traction going, because I was watching yesterday, New York One, Max from Max's Exit was on, and we all know him, except for Meryl, but, and he made a few very good points about the reopening in Staten Island as far as restaurants and outdoor dining and so on and so forth. And it was interesting, because it was something that Elite and I were just talking about, that you could have people assembling and demonstrating, and again, I'm all for that, and going to Whole Foods and going to Costco, and you have a volume of people that are going into a store at any given day and staying for a certain amount of hours, and yet there are shackles on the reopening of restaurants in Staten Island.
Yeah, that's about right. That's the irony of the whole situation. The restaurant owners, especially on Staten Island, are infuriated with the whole situation, because we are not like the rest of New York City. We have a lot of open spaces and parking lots and some sidewalks that can be, you know, reconfigured a little bit with some help with the Department of Transportation to allow people to sit outside and eat with alfresco dining. I did my politics is not my beat, but I did have an opportunity to sit in on a press conference with the city council speaker, Corey Johnson, last week. And it was very interesting. They're actually the city council people on Staten Island, the three of them, and also Corey Johnson himself, seemed very encouraging to, you know, it was very encouraging to hear them want to help the restaurant so badly. I did get to ask a question at the very end of this whole thing. And my question was, my two questions were, can Staten Island open sooner than the rest of the city? And, you know, are there going to be any considerations on people's rent and taxes and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we going to do
mm-hmm.
about this? He basically said no and no. And it's, even though we're very close to New Jersey, and the likely thing with New Jersey opening with their restaurants is that people are going to go there if they want to go dine out. You know, there's a lot of other things to consider. But, you know, the main thing, especially the people in Manhattan, the rents, my goodness, even on Staten Island, they're able to open a little bit, and they've been able to make the curbside pickup work. I had an interesting conversation over the last couple of days with the lady who owns Edgar's Ice Cream. Her name is Danielle Rally, and she's going to be opening up in historic Richmond Town tomorrow, her ice cream stand. And they've taken over a retrofitted diner. The diner was used in Boardwalk Empire.
It's
really adorable. And so she's going to be doing her open air format there, and, you know, I mean, she can do it.
Right.
So,
that's so easy to do because she's freestanding and everybody sits outside. You know, they sit at the picnic benches, you walk around the park or whatever. But to sit inside of a restaurant is going to be very tough.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, my husband even, and my husband's a chef, he's like, I don't want to go to a restaurant and sit there for 2 hours. I mean, in fact, it'll be many, many months before we ever do that again in his book. And the children, my kids, are a little spooked as well, to be honest with you. And, you know, so I think that the general, even though restaurants really want to open and they want the 50% capacity back, the reality is that, well, the people come, you know, I think that they're spooked. They're very germophobic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have reports of restaurant owners telling me that they get videoed often, you know, when there's, let's say, scooping ice cream, or they're doing something where maybe it doesn't appear that they're changing the gloves. So they're that's a bad dynamic.
Meryl, what's your take?
Well, you know, there's quite a dichotomy between the different restaurateurs and how they're viewing this. You know, you take somebody like Danny Meyer, who says that he's not going to open a single one of his restaurants until the entire pandemic is over. But, you know, to a certain extent, he can afford to do that. And he's doing things like having wine auctions and wine deliveries and other ways to make money to support his payroll. But you take the small restaurateurs, and they're chomping at the bit. They have to open if they're going to succeed. And, you know, they're all very, very worried about a 50% capacity rule, and they don't have outdoor seating necessarily. You know, and it's tough all around. It's really tough. As much as they've been pivoting as much as they can to be creative to survive, you know, with outdoor windows and selling liquor and takeout delivery, et cetera, from high end to low end, everybody is impacted. And it's really a depressing situation. And I think one big difference between Staten Island and Manhattan, which I think you touched on in a previous show, was that the restaurateurs in Manhattan don't own their buildings. So they really are subject to rent, and unless they're in partnership with the landlord, as is Italy, for example, you know, they don't have that kind of luxury, so to speak, which I use very loosely, to you know, forego a lot of their costs. And the rents are higher than in Staten Island.
Meryl, I guess you live in Manhattan.
I do.
And I was a little stunned this morning. My colleague, Sydney Keshawagi, who covers politics, she lives in Manhattan, and she was doing a whole thing on, she had walked up and down Fifth Avenue, and basically in front of Saks Fifth Avenue, you know, they have barbed wire, they have, you know, guards, you know, and the reality is that phase one is happening supposedly on Monday, and these businesses are shackled by, you know, looters. I mean, it's just the most uncanny situation that we're in.
Took a step backwards.
I mean, the forecast for restaurants, that wasn't really till much later. You know, there's the reality is probably closer to July, the beginning of July for opening.
Wow.
But the businesses like Saks is completely boarded up. You're absolutely correct. I mean, it's insane what's gone on in the past 4 or 5 days. Insane.
You know, it's funny because just 2 days ago, I'm sitting in my office at home, and I'm doing work, and my phone goes off. And I thought it was an Amber Alert. You know, the phone goes off. and you realize it's a curfew alert. And then I'm like,
yep,
looking at the phone, I hear my husband downstairs,
yep,
and yeah, he's in his office and the phone is going off. And I'm thinking to myself, never in my life, and I'm walking this earth 57 years, did that ever become part of our landscape?
Yep.
And here it is.
Mm. I know, and people now, like my son has two businesses in Brooklyn. He had to raise them today, one's in Park Slope, the other one in Cobble Hill,
yeah,
to board up
yeah
his storefronts.
Oh,
That's a precaution.
Meryl, what is, you know, in Staten Island, on New Dorp Lane, the restaurant owners have been getting something that's been going around social media. They don't know if it's a hoax or what have you, about, you know, some sort of thing happening this afternoon. There's another thing, rumors going around about something on Friday, and you know, it's hard to tell what's real, what's not. How does your son know that there's like a very real threat?
Well, because in terms of Park Slope, for example, very near, very close by were some of the locations where people were protesting and starting to have,
yeah,
you know, the violent after dark aftermath. And
yeah,
he can't take a chance. Both of his locations are in downtown Brooklyn. And because they keep changing the paths and the locations to cover, you know, a random patchwork, it seems, he can't take a chance.
Oh, boy. I'm so sorry.
You
blame him.
Yeah, it's really insane.
It's no longer at Barclay. I mean, where are they? They're changing the pattern of where it starts?
Well, they were doing there were a couple of locations in Brooklyn. There was Restoration Plaza, which is in Bed-Stuy.
Okay.
And Barclays. And just the proximity to other neighborhoods, you know, so
yeah,
you have Park
yeah
Slope and Prospect Park, you know, all
yeah
of these
yeah
areas.
Yeah.
Anybody can wander off and create another pocket.
Wow.
Insane.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Very scary. Very scary.
Now, you know, in Manhattan, it seems to be quite variable too. Yesterday there was a gathering at 95th
yeah
and Madison, and then 71st
yeah
and 1st. You know, it's just like
yeah
a 37th and Lex. Like, why?
Yeah.
You know, you can't
yeah
figure
I
out
know
somebody's behind all this. It's insane.
It's
yeah
very random.
Yeah. I keep
yeah
using
it's,
that
it's,
word
it's,
because it's the only one I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, it's very oddly placed. It definitely is. You know, again, and I was saying before, as much as I am about, you know, it's our right to assemble, I think it's a wonderful thing, but I don't necessarily know that this is the best thing for now, because are we going to see numbers escalating? Is this going to cause an impact in things opening? Is this going to pause phase two for another month? It could possibly. It could.
Well, they're talking about that. You know, they are actually expecting a surge in COVID, you know, to happen as a result of this, because people are so close together, many not with masks. You know, the optimism that people might have started to feel a little bit for restaurants in September, for September-ish, that'll coincide with flu. And
yeah
all of a sudden,
yeah,
you know, wham, we're going to be slammed again.
You know,
and don't even get me started on theater. You know, that's another.
Oh, forget it.
Oh, I can only imagine.
That'll be the last to
you
come
know
back.
What I wanted to ask you about. Now, I'm thinking about all the restaurants on Theater Row. I'm thinking of Carmine's. I'm thinking of all those places that most tourists, I mean, most of the people that go there, I mean, people that are in New York go elsewhere, but most of the tourists that come into the city to see a show will go to the Carmine's, will go to all those little restaurants, and they're lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, without the foot traffic to the theater, how are these places going to How are they going to exist even when other restaurants are opening? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think it's really doubtful. I don't know, Pam, if you agree with me, but I think these restaurants are the ones most in danger. You know, the larger
mm-hmm
chains have the resources
yeah
behind them, and I hope we just don't see a city filled with Red Lobster and, you know,
mm-hmm
that
mm-hmm
type of restaurant or Olive Garden. You know, it's the mom
yeah
and the pop that give the city its character and its
yeah
panoply
yeah
of ethnicity that we love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Broadway, I had spoken to somebody behind with Carmine's, and the Upper West Side was
mm-hmm
location was doing a lot of delivery and all, and clearly meant the Times Square location was closed with no
yeah.
no foreseeable
oh,
opening.
I was just there too.
The thing is that I don't know who would want to do business in New York at this point. I mean, just with
yeah.
the current administration, I mean, I don't want to get political, but the reality is that, you know, people feel completely helpless and unheard. You know, especially then I'm speaking about the Staten Island restaurant owners who basically formed their own group. They formed something called IROR, which is, I think, the Independent Restaurant Organization, something of that effect, where they wrote a letter to Governor Cuomo. They got a response. They wanted, you know, certain things to happen. One is to open almost immediately with the 50% capacity and to, you know, basically say, you know what, we're going to take care of things. We're going to have hand-washing stations, you know, we're going to be putting plexiglass between the tables. We're going to be, you know, doing alfresco dining as soon as we can. We're going to be doing all these things to assure people that they're going to feel safe. We're going to not jeopardize our employees' health. And you've got to just believe that we're going to do this. We're going to do the right thing, but just, you know, relax on the laws, you know.
Yes.
I think what happened yesterday with Cuomo, I mean, that was just like, you know, there's like a war between the mayor and the governor.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Always been.
Yeah.
It's always been. It's always been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're never going to agree.
Yeah, but... I mean, one of the discussions that I heard from Governor Cuomo's office that was encouraging was that they would, or maybe de Blasio was in sync with this too. I've lost track of who's saying yes or no at this point. But allowing restaurants to have sidewalk cafe privileges that they didn't have before at no cost, and that would help a lot. And also considering the open streets initiative, which would take back some of the streets and allow for outdoor seating. And that would be a real plus. You know, if you look at what's going on in Europe as a model, perhaps, like Germany has a lot of outdoor seating. They give people funky hats to wear that create spacing. Have you seen this online?
Cool. Yeah.
It's very creative.
No,
it's like,
that.
You know, surrounding yourself in a bubble and effecting mandatory social distancing. And it's creative.
Yeah.
And people are enjoying that. It's cafe life. It's outdoor socializing that's smartly done with safety in mind. And if we can do that sort of thing here, there'll be hope for certain restaurants that have that space
right.
adjacent, you know, opportunities. Yeah.
You know, this has changed things on so many levels. I actually had a conversation with the district attorney's office yesterday on Staten Island. A lot of people are very upset, you know, about losing their deposits or they don't feel that they are getting them back in a timely manner. You know, catering halls are really stuck. I mean, there's just I don't even know when you could possibly open a catering hall. I mean, that's just crazy to me.
How about he booked weddings that were booked for years?
Oh, I can't even. Oh, my God, that's a nightmare. Oh, that's a nightmare.
Oh, just the whole domino effect and the effect on the industry not having parties.
Right.
What's happened on Staten Island, and I'm sure, Meryl, you've seen this in Manhattan and Brooklyn, they're making smaller cakes. You know, the thing that's keeping the industry alive these last several weeks on Staten Island has been the drive-by birthday parties, which is kind of clever. And I've been in a couple of them, and they're actually very fun.
They had one
right here
on my street the other day. It was so cute.
Oh, nice. Oh,
yeah.
That's cute. It's nice.
A little bit of joy, you know?
Yeah, but very loud. Honk, 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 all night.
They are very loud. But the birthday girl, the birthday boy, feels special for all 5 minutes.
Everybody deserves
it. Of course.
So. But a couple of little trends that have popped up on Staten Island, people love having parties here, and cake business, the occasion cake business, cupcake business, those things were booming just 3 or 4 months ago. And what's happened is they've continued. You know, some of the cake people, you know, had a little fun with it. One woman has done something like over 100, I'm sorry about that noise, over 100 toilet paper cakes and Lysol cakes and, you know, just, you know, kind of going with it. Smaller scale.
That's cute.
One thing
that I saw in Manhattan over the weekend was, you know, the weather was so magnificent on Sunday. Central Park absolutely was filled with people as if it were a normal day, but people were really picnicking.
Yeah.
And as some of the restaurants that I spoke with Alan Phillips, who runs Friedman's and a bunch of other restaurants in the city.
Mm-hmm.
He said their picnic basket to go business is up.
That's
an opportunity. I know Cheska on the Upper West Side used to do that. I don't know whether they're doing doing it now, but it's,
smart.
It's sad too, though, that Le Pain Quotidien is gone. You know, they couldn't make it, because that would have been a natural for them, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it's, but I think some of the restaurants in Manhattan that are near parks are doing okay. Like Black Barn, which is right on Madison Park. You know, they can do a to-go pack and people just go to the park. You know, that's an opportunity for some. Or if they're near hospitals, they're still doing okay because they're catering that way.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Also on the Upper East Side is near Mount Sinai, and they're doing a lot of donation-based business.
Sure.
But beyond that, catering halls, not so much.
Yeah.
I know. I spoke with a friend of mine who's a chef who owns a catering hall. He doesn't own it. He leases it. And what he's done, and, you know, people have to be creative, and it's easy to say this from the sidelines, but, you know, and especially when you're mired in fighting, you know, to get the governor's ear and, you know, to get the legislator's ear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, they have to be creative and look at space outside their restaurant. They have to look at the rooftop. They have to look at every single corner that they could do business and modify, like the lunch boxes. It's interesting that some people are doing very well. There's a restaurant called Daddy-O's, which is in Tompkinsville.
Yep.
It's Tompkins, it's surrounded by other interesting kind of businesses that are not doing particularly well, but there are other places in the section there that can also kind of collaborate on using the space in the area. So there's Daddy-O's restaurant, there's Flower and Oak, which is not yet opened. There's O. Henry's Public House, which is on Minthorn Street. And the O. Henry's Public House just opened, sadly, in February, I believe it was. And, you know, they have a fish and chips and this, you know, Great Britain food and a nice bar program. And actually, right next door to that is Flagship Brewing Company. And, you know, in this pandemic, one of the places that's done pretty well has been Flagship, not for its beer, but because they came out with a new seltzer. It's a hard seltzer called, it's a Ralph's Ices collaboration.
I love it. Yep, I love that.
Oh, did you try it?
No, I didn't, but I've been watching it on your show. I think that's genius.
Oh, I have to send you some.
It's just wonderful. Oh, thank you. That's beautiful.
You know, it's a little bit of sunshine in this whole nonsense, but... And the other thing, other people who are doing well, there's a woman on Staten Island who manufactures chicken pot pies. She just started doing this, her aunt's recipe, and the aunt is a caterer, and she's incredibly busy. She's doing all sorts of, like, small meals for very wealthy people in Manhattan, and she packs up their meals as, like, dinners, as if they were restaurant style. She freezes them, and then they, you know, reheat them because they can't get out in the restaurant. So, some people are very creative.
Yeah,
in New York City, I think there's a little bit of a novelty factor in terms of some of the restaurants that, the ones that are doing well for the moment, you know, ones that you couldn't get into before are now doing takeout. So that some of those are doing well. For example, Rao's. You would never get a reservation there. Their kitchen is just pumping. I mean, really, you know, making more meatballs than they could have ever imagined ever. And they're doing very well because people are excited to try the food, even though they're not getting the ambiance, which is really what Rao's is about. But also, you know, places like some of the sushi restaurants that were very difficult to get into, Sushi Knows, Sushi Ishikawa, are doing takeout. Jean George is doing takeout. I mean, things like that you wouldn't have imagined. Carbone has a nightly special email they send out. I mean, this is crazy.
Holy moly.
Really? No kidding.
No.
Wow. No.
Well, I'm going to ask a very scary question to Meryl. And I know a lot of people in theater, and they just can't wait to get back on the boards. When do you see that happening? Now, Lincoln Center already said they might think about the opening being in October, but it's very dismal. Where do you think we're going to be as far as actually having what we knew of a Broadway show? Even off-Broadway, I can see it happening, but I want to hear from you.
Yeah, well, two things. First, I want to address your Lincoln Center comment first, because I heard something very, very different, that the Metropolitan Opera is scheduled to kick off their season on January 1st with a gala. boy. Nothing.
Yeah, that
before,
was that
nothing,
was on the news the
before.
Other day.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, nothing before. So October, I doubt it. Doubt it.
Oh.
In terms of Broadway, first of all, there's really no possibility of it being as it was before. You know, you just think of what the physical ramifications are.
Yeah.
You know, you're cheek to cheek in seating, the orchestra pit, the bathrooms, the rehearsal space, the staging.
Yeah.
You know, we can't go back to that. So, you know, the forecast at this point is for some sort of likely opening in January, maybe even later. And the number of shows will be quite reduced. The type of shows could be quite reduced. The number of financial investors obviously will go down. I had a beautiful interview with Daryl Ross. I think you might know her. She's a very successful producer.
Yes.
She's had like
seven
Pulitzer Prize plays.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to actually read you a quote that she gave me.
Go
because
ahead.
I think it says it all. It's unclear what the new normal will be, but art matters. As it has been through the ages, and theater and live performance will be there to renew our sense of community and humanity. So, you know, that's the spirit. The spirit is there to get everybody back on stage, to get that community going, you know, to get all the efforts that the Actors Fund is doing right now to support the community and all. But the theaters themselves, oh boy, it's going to be different. I did hear of one very positive note, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire that was scheduled to open.
Yes.
They have actually reconfigured the choreography and the staging so that they could actually do social distancing on stage.
Oh.
And that's a glimmer. You know, it's really a glimmer. If people, maybe this can be done for some of the shows, maybe not for the bigger ones. You know, maybe Jagged Little Pill will have a problem.
Yeah.
But the seating, the physical seating is an enormous issue, and it has to really be reckoned with. I think, you know, we're going to look at the West End for help to see what they're doing. Look at some of the touring companies, some of the regional theaters that are smaller, and see if there are any cues or any, you know, any notes that we can learn from. But this is a tough one, and Broadway really probably will be the very last thing to come back.
Yeah.
And it goes hand in hand with tourism. So, you know, make everything worse for Broadway.
Exactly.
It's really sad. I'm sorry I'm so doom and gloomy here.
No.
This is the truth. You're giving us the truth.
Because I'm even thinking about as a performer, and Meryl's come to a couple of my gigs, and if you have a small stage, and you can't stay, especially if it's a larger band, if you have like a small little orchestra, it's so hard to social distance. And if the stage is small, there's just nothing you could do. So even if the seating is, you know, accommodating to social distance, as a performer, it's just so hard to do. It's almost impossible because you move, because you have to go. I mean, as a bass player, I have to go near the drummer. I can't 6 foot that. So it's just going to be a totally different puzzle that we have to solve.
And you'll probably have to put yourself behind plexiglass.
That's
on
the stage. I mean, really. You know, because you can't fit. You know, whatever.
And this is what
our whole world is going to change. The whole configuration. There's no way of going back to restaurants as they were, theater as it was.
But I think
musical venues as they were.
Yeah, I don't think now. I think within a couple of years, let's hope that it does, you know. Let's not, you know, think about that it's never going to happen. It's got to happen. I mean, this is our revenue in life.
I know. Once we have a vaccine, you know, that could help a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And perhaps we'll get that herd immunity. But, you know, the challenge is at this point, the last study I read said that only 50% of people are willing to get the vaccine, and that's depressing.
Really?
50%. Well, because they're afraid to get the disease. They don't think they need it, and it really skews by age. You know, the older people are definitely willing to take it, to get it, and the younger people think they're invincible.
I totally get it. You know, and I'm thinking about me going to a restaurant, and when I go to a restaurant, It has very little to do with food. I just love being around people. If the drinks are good, I'm fine. And I don't really, I love a small restaurant where I could talk to the people next to us. I just love that whole social intercourse. So that bothers me because I don't want to be separated from people because, you know, I could cook at home. The reason for me to be in a restaurant is to be around people. I enjoy that.
Right.
So this is like so depressing for me.
Well, this is going to be like this for at least 2 or 3 years. This is going to be, you know, unfortunate, but we'll get back to it, you know, but it's going to be a long time. We're going to lose a lot of business along the way. And hopefully we never forget this. You know, it seems, my I mentioned before, my grandmother is 101.
Oh, well, God bless her.
Thank you. And,
that's amazing.
It's kind of crazy when you think about it because she dealt with it. I mean, she would have been 1 or 2 years old, but she dealt with the pandemic 100 years ago, you know, and the outcome of that was, you know, several years afterwards where people changed their ways. And my grandmother, you know, you don't put the elbows on the table and you don't touch your face.
Yeah.
And, you know, certain mannerisms have developed from it. And hopefully, you know, a little bit of manners maybe will be one of the things that happens, you know.
And maybe we'll have a very positive roaring 20s again.
Oh,
happened after the pandemic.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to be surprised at all.
Just, I know people are going to be so hungry for that kind of community and socialization and everything about it.
For sure.
So maybe we will have it, and that's the optimism. I think, as you're saying, Pam, you know, it'll take a little bit of time. And then the health protocols will come into play, and people also will forget. You know, remember 9/11. Remember what happened afterwards.
Of course.
It took a few years.
Exactly. Yeah.
A little bit different, you know, because we have a silent killer now. It's different. But
But, I mean, think about it this way, too. I mean, imagine if this were like a nuclear issue or, you know, there was something bigger. But I just think that the unimaginable is, I don't know, it's really, and I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer either, but, I think at this point in time, the conversation is, you know, it's a gloomy one because of what's going on with the looting. I think that is just not helping, clarify anything.
It's really affecting the small businesses, you know, so unnecessarily. The ones that were just about ready, they were poised to come back.
I know,
yeah.
I know.
So unfair.
That's the saddest part.
Well, that's what Reed and I were discussing before this. And again, Pamela, I think you're a little younger than us. So I remember the blackout of 77 was very different than the blackout from 2003. We had an economic stability in 2003. It didn't all, I mean, everything started happening around 2006 and then 2008 happened. But in 77, we were just coming out of a very wobbly recession. So the looting, look, it just had to happen. And when that horrible thing happened and I knew people were going to be demonstrating, I said to myself, okay, we have a perfect storm here because we have people that are out of work. We have people that have no known income, people that are waiting for checks that aren't coming. And then you have an angry mob mentality that will always exist, always, and very different than people that are demonstrating, very different. So it had to happen. I knew it was going to. And that's the sad part.
In the climate these days, everybody's angry.
I know.
Well, that's
the everybody.
Thing. You take food and shelter away from somebody, and I always, one of my favorite quotes from Oliver Wendell Holmes, be careful how much hope you take away from a human being. And that's what happened with this pandemic. There's no hope. So people are going to, look, everybody's going to react differently, and I can't put my template on somebody else. But there are people that are underserved that will react whatever way they can, and there are those that won't. And that's just the nature of it. And it's like I said, it was the perfect storm. It was the perfect storm.
You know, it's interesting. I try to reach back into different times of my life, and I'm 48. I'm an only child. I spent a lot of time, I guess, by myself, and a lot of time with my grandparents. You know, I think back to times when I was feeling exactly the way I'm feeling now these days, which is, you know, isolated, and I tap into these times at my grandmother's apartment in Brooklyn, in Bay Ridge, and they came out of the Great Depression, they, you know, yeah. time moved slowly for them, and they were okay with that, you know. And I think that's what we have to remind ourselves of, is that, you know, everything that you do has to be purposeful. You know, if you, yeah. you know, when you eat something, it's got to be with purpose and it's for nutrition mm-hmm. or, you know, and I think that another thing that came out of this is, you know, the inactivity and the isolation and being, you know, unhealthy, not being able to go to the gym, mm-hmm. you know, not looking good, not going to the hairdresser. It's really, you know, it goes back to your quote there about hope. You know, there's like no relief, you know. It's like
yeah.
being
yeah.
in my grandparents' apartment when it's 102 degrees outside and there's no air conditioning mm-hmm. and there's no relief,
just
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of what I liken it to. So.
Right. Well, I think that's the crux of it, because people look ahead and don't see an end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
And you know, I was thinking all this time. Now I was young. I was 12 when my grandmother passed, and I think she told me all this wonderful stuff, and I didn't listen. But that's just the nature of being that age. You don't listen. You don't want to hear about the Depression or the Spanish flu or the you don't want to hear about that. It doesn't
right.
concern
right.
you. It doesn't concern your friends. It doesn't concern your day or going swimming. So you don't listen. And I think now, my God, I would have loved to know how she felt during this time, what she did. My grandmother had 12 kids. So I'm thinking
wow.
to myself, how did she do it? But, you know, they were able to put a family of 12 with the two adults. They were able to put meat on the table during the Depression every night, with just one income. And I think to myself, how did they do it? And they owned a house. How did they do it then? It's just mind-boggling to me. But at that age, you don't ask the questions because you just don't care. And I wish I asked them now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. True. And again, we need to keep in mind, though, you know, times are so different now from then. You know, our lives
yeah.
are so much more complicated. We have so many more responsibilities, and the news is flying at us every second.
Yeah.
So, and they had FDR to listen to, or what, you know, whatever
yeah.
with fireside chats. They had an inspirational
yeah.
leadership
yeah.
going, helping them to
oh,
get through
yeah.
it. So as trying yeah. as times were, and you know, there was the WPA program. There were a lot of initiatives
yep.
that helped. And what do we have?
Yeah.
And I don't want to get off into politics, because I can.
No.
But I won't.
No. No. I know.
You know what I'm saying.
I know. You and I.
Amen.
You know, but this is, yeah. But that's the whole thing. And, you know, again, I have disagreed in policy with so many people. And it's just policy. And that's it. But this is a very different leadership than I've ever seen. And, again, I could find the value in everybody that has led us, even if I voted against them. That's okay, but I'm going to vote against you. And even the people I voted for, there was disappointment. But this is different. This is an entirely different dynamic to all this. And I think that's part of, we don't know where it's going to go. We don't know where it's
yeah.
going to go.
I started in March and April. I started, you know, researching, especially theater and restaurants, since that's what I'm
mm-hmm.
most involved in. And I gave up on travel at that point because of everything being canceled and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I look back at my notes, you know, from a month ago, 2 months ago, and everything keeps changing and changing day by day. So you can't find any linear prediction. You can't. And that's what's so trying. And I have to say I admire the creativity of the restaurants that are doing whatever they're able to do right now. You know, when I walk down Broadway and Amsterdam Avenue this weekend, and people have their windows set up and they have their bottles of liquor and beer outside, and they have their to-go
mm-hmm.
situations and lineups for the bakery at Levant and Or Washers. And they're working it. They're doing what they can. They are really
yeah.
doing what they can. And I hate the word pivot. I hate that so much. But
mm-hmm.
they are pivoting, you know, creatively.
Yeah.
And I think we all have
yeah.
to hold on to that and do what we can until, you know, it just doesn't make financial sense or whatever the end
yeah.
point is. And hopefully there won't be. Hopefully
yeah.
the government
yeah.
will give us some continued support and rework the PPP guidelines and PUA
yeah.
and everything else that is helping.
Yeah, yeah,
discussed
this
last week.
And there are some industries that just won't,
We discussed this last week. You know, I'm going to speak, you know, actually directly to Pamela that, you know, I want to support the restaurants, and I've been ordering out a lot, you know, ordering in. But I have to tell you, 90% of the restaurants are really screwing up everything. They're not sending the right things. They're not even giving the orders that I've ordered. Whatever I order goes to other people. They're sending me something different. The orders are all mishmashed. It takes 3 hours for an order to be delivered. I mean, looking to make money, you need to get more help and get your orders intact, because now I don't even order in anymore because I've lost it. I don't want to get aggravated again. They're just not. I can't even tell you one restaurant that's done good, because they've all screwed up big time, big time.
Well,
so they really need to start.
It's such a good point.
They have to really start bringing up their game, because I will not order in anymore. I'd rather cook than support them, because I don't want to get aggravated. I really don't. I just want to support you, but give me what I'm paying for and give it to me in a timely manner. And give them, it's just terrible. It's really terrible. And we're big-time order-ins, very big time, but now we don't do it anymore.
So I guess I've had a different experience in Manhattan. I've done takeout rather than delivery. And, you know, I'm there, I pick it up, and it's been fine. And I think there are so many restaurants, and they're so used to doing that, that it works. It works. And I can't say that they can hire more people, because they can't afford to.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. Right. But get the order right. You know, make yourself look pristine in this time of, this climate right now, because we need to see that you really care about us and you really want to do your job, because now they're falling through the cracks. And the more you fall through the cracks, you're not going to last at the end of it. You're not, because people like everybody else are going to complain. I'm not going to mention names, because I would never want to do that, but they're really terrible, terrible, terrible.
At the same time, I've seen some really good things come out with the to-go stuff. There's a place called Basil Cucina, which always got the packaging right. Places on Forest Avenue, they deliver all over the island. They have these beautiful...
We basically stay to the restaurants we've always gone to, because, you know, they know us. They know us by name, but they have not done what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, it's troubling. But the places that got it right, they invested in, you know, these clear dome packaging containers for salads, a maybe stronger paper bag, menus that are, reusable, or things that you can kind of hang in the house. And also, they have like a nice program. Also, what I've noticed is a lot of the online platforms, they were so taken off guard, restaurants, with this, that their online ordering systems are kind of a mess now. So it's interesting. But on a more positive note, it's going to be like this. And they just, are going to get used to it, and it will be okay. And we're going to get through this. We're going to lose a lot of restaurants along the way. We're going to lose a lot of industries along the way. I'm just thankful to be working, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
This is a situation that will definitely continue. The restaurateurs that I spoke to in Manhattan know that this is going to be part of their model going forward. It has to be takeout and delivery. If they weren't doing it before, so they're trying to figure it out. And some of it is baby steps. They're learning how to do the online. They're learning which delivery services to work with and which ones aren't going to take advantage of them, with 30% fees and things of that sort.
Right.
So, a lot of it is a learning process, and I think it's just going to be part of our new normal for quite a while, if not forever.
That's true. That is true.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I'm worried about. I can tell you right now, Lee Ziegelman, I'm going to have the Ziegelmans over on Sunday for a barbecue. Mostly this is, of course. And I know her and Steve all the way home are going to be complaining about my husband's cooking, complaining about this, complaining about that. I know it.
No,
that's not true.
I've actually, grown accustomed to eating from home, and I'm actually enjoying it more because it's made to my tasting. I don't have to wait for it. It's the right thing. I mean, it's just very disappointing lately. I mean, with everything else that's happening.
you know what? I like to cook at home. I do. I've come to cooking late in life, and I love it. But I do go to my restaurants that we've gone to, and just support them. I want to keep them afloat.
Right.
I want them to be there when you know everything is back to what we feel comfortable. So at least a couple of times a week, we go to different restaurants in Bay Ridge and we order in, just to keep them afloat. That's it. But
do you
as a norm,
take out or do you order to your home?
Well, I go there and I wait. And I like to talk to people, so I talk with my
mouth.
We go into
another aspect of because of this coronavirus. You know, I live in a very small development where there's no parking to begin with. So if we go take the car and go to the restaurant, we lose our parking spot because we don't have any parking spot. So it's just a double-edged sword here. It's just so disheartening with everything that's happening because you can't win either way you look at it.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. But I'm still worried about Sunday. John and I will be praying for you right here. That's what we're gonna be doing. I'm worried like hell. Before you two ladies go, I want you to talk about your blogs. Give a shout out so we could put it on our page tomorrow. Pamela, you have Pamela's diary. What is your blog?
It's on Staten Island SI Live, the Staten Island Dances webpage is something. It's a food service diary. I documented the daily, ups and downs of the restaurant business through the whole pandemic since I think it's March 25th when it started getting really bleak. And it was a way of reaching out to readers. And then 9 a.m. Facebook, that's my own thing, but that's my therapy. So thank you very much for tuning in, Gloria. I really appreciate that.
Oh my God. If I don't see you live every day, cause sometimes I'm on the phone doing stuff, but I haven't missed a day yet. I always tune in later when it's not live and I say hello. No, it's just
thank
a wonderful thing that you're doing. And it takes, anybody who does this, it takes a lot of work to do it every single day when you have a life happening in the background. It's not easy. It's just not easy. So you're doing a wonderful thing. Meryl, what is your link?
Okay, my site is called Travel and Food Notes, and it's www.travelandfoodnotes.com. So obviously you see what I focus on. And then I also have a column on a site called allnewyork.com, and that's www.allny.com, and it's a resource guide for everything to do in New York, especially New York City. And there you'll find travel, you'll find restaurants, you'll find theater. And I also have a portfolio if you go to Travel and Food Notes that will give you a link to all my other writing on Contently. So if you were to go to Contently, contently.com, and put in my name, Meryl Pearlstein, you'll get all of my articles, which are in a lot of different publications like Flash Magazine, Go World, Travel, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm all over the place. And thank you so much for allowing me to say that.
And how do you and I know each other? 17 years, 15 years? I was trying to think with Elite before. We go way back.
Well, I'm trying to remember because I met you because I pulled my hamstring. And I was traveling in Spain. I pulled my hamstring.
Right.
So that goes back to, oh my God, it would have been early 90s, Laurie.
Yeah. My God.
Early 90s.
Long.
So what does that mean? Hey, like 20 years? 20 years?
You've always been in my life. Meryl has always been in my life. So
I
just realized that's what I was saying. I want to put a number to it. I couldn't think of it. But yeah, that's exactly right. Beautiful.
That's right. Yeah, and my anniversary is Sunday. My anniversary is Sunday.
Oh.
So. Happy anniversary.
Anniversary.
Thank you. This is a month for it.
Yes, it is. I think every rose is in bloom.
Jim is okay, Meryl? How's Jim doing?
Well, he's in isolation. He has to be in isolation for one more week. But I had my antibody test done this week, and I am positive. So my COVID test was negative. My antibody test was positive.
Wow.
Whatever that actually says, who knows? But at least it makes me feel a tiny bit more comfortable.
I know.
And I will be able to pick him up out of isolation next Sunday. Not on the 14th, rather. Actually, on the 14th. We will be apart for our anniversary, which is very sad.
Okay. But, you know, you're going to connect again, and that's all that matters. I think that's the great thing.
Yeah.
You know, you could always
postpone
an anniversary. Yeah, have a nice candlelight dinner. Yeah, you'll do it. Thank you, ladies, for joining us. And again,
thank you so much for having me.
Let's try to do it maybe again next month. I mean, this is going to be with us a while, so if your schedule to accommodate, we'd love to have you both. Pamela,
thank you. I would love to. Thank you so much, Elite. Laurie,
thank
Pamela,
you.
Nice to meet you.
Meryl,
thank you very
pleasure.
Much.
Thank
you, Meryl.
You
nice
so
to meet
much.
You. All right.
Both
bye-bye
of you
now.
Be safe. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Everybody stay safe. And sane. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
That was a lively conversation, Elite.
Yeah, definitely. Very
that?
Informative, you know.
You know what? I like it because there's a really sharp contrast between, you know, Manhattan and Staten Island.
Right.
You know, it's and again, not better, worse. It's just a different model entirely. And it's just great. You know what? And I don't know anything about that business. So I find it fascinating because the things that I wouldn't think of that could go wrong in that business specifically, it's just mind-boggling to me. And I have to say, years ago, a friend of mine had his mother came from Paris and his father came from Paris, and they have this lit. When I tell you, this little 2x4 building on, oh my God, I think it's 48th Street. That's got what theater it's near. But they came here as immigrants and they bought the building, and the restaurant is downstairs, and if it seats 20 people, that's a lot. I mean, you go in there and you're literally cramped. But they own the whole building. The building is paid off, and the building probably is like $10 million plus the revenue of the restaurant. And that's how you did it back then. You bought the friggin' building. That's it. And the building probably wasn't much. Maybe in the 30s, maybe the building was $20,000, which was a lot then, if the average salary was maybe $100,000. But you put money together and you bought the building. That's just crazy.
Way to do it.
Yeah. And he didn't want to go into the restaurant business, but he eventually did because his mother got ill. He had to take over. But, you know, in those days, you know, you had to stop off at the restaurant after school and, you know, chip in and help out. He didn't want to do it. It was what you were used to your whole life, and you didn't want to be part of it. But as an adult, and you think, my God, now I have a business that's probably with the building worth $10 million. So, funny.
Imagine that.
How you look at things. But you don't get it. See, that's the whole thing. I always say you could have everything in life, but you just don't have it at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, it's not meant to be at the same time. You have to wait.
Wow.
You know?
Not at all. Not at all. But it was a great show, and we will have them on again next month. And I think they were a nice give and take and very respectful of each other's import. And again, you know, when we're out of a studio, when you and I are in the studio, we can at least guarantee two people are not going to step on each other's toes. But when there are four people, yeah, it could be a head-on collision, so I'm glad that didn't happen. So, that's our show for today. What say you, Lee Siegelman?
I think so. I think it was very good, informative. We learned a lot. No? Why are you laughing?
I love you, love the way you went, yeah. But we thank Pamela Silvestri from the Staten Island Advance, and Meryl Pearlstein for Time Out Magazine, New York Magazine, GQ, wealth of other things that I'm sure she'll get annoyed at me for not mentioning. But, yeah, okay, sure. And thank everybody for joining us. And, you know, the people that are joining us and have stayed with us through this, it's like we're 90 days deep. And, you know, I think we're going to get there. I think we're going to get there. And one day we'll all have.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah, one day we'll talk about this, and we'll say, remember when.
And we will.
Definitely will
this
pass.
This too shall pass, and,
yes,
and
it
here
does.
We are.
We just have to be positive, be nice to each other, and, you know, just accept things as they come. That's it.
And think about this. Remember our first show back from, it was week one into the pandemic, and we came back. And that seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Like 3 months
and it
already,
just seemed
right?
like we came back. We weren't sure what we were going to be like with the sound effects and the student being out of the studio. And here we are. And we did it, and, you know, we'll do it throughout. So thank you all for joining us. My lovely co-host, 8 years and counting by my side. Thank you, Elite Ziegelman.
Well, thank you for having me.
Wait, I'm going to give you something else. Hang on, sweetheart. You stay right there. There you go.
I'm walking by the construction workers now.
You put your top down, girl. You stop that. Stop that right now. Get in your house. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back next week with Tammy Lee Webb for the Health Roundtable and Sonia Marie Romero. And they'll be doing Health Roundtable with us every month because we do need that because we're eating too much, drinking too much, doing a lot of too much. Not too much exercise, though. That's never the case. Never the case, is it? But thank
you for
joining
us. Well,
I'm
sure it's not the case for me and you, but that's a different story.
No, I think we're exercising too much, but that's just our drug of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, be kind to each other, be safe, and make the world a better place if you can. Nina, take us home.
Bye-bye, everybody.